Browns departing the Greenbrier. They're back, are headed back towards Cleveland here as we get you ready for preseason game number one in just over a week for the Cleveland Browns. Football is approaching very quickly, and there's many ways, many ways to get you ready for the season. And one is to look at the numbers. We're going to bring on one of the best to do it, and a man who, in a lot of ways, created the public sports analytics side of things for you and me, for the Browns fans out there. We head out to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome on CAO of For the Numbers. He's also an ESPN Plus NFL analyst. And right now, you guys can go to FTNFantasy.com for his yearly football almanac. Aaron Schatz, welcome to the show.
Hey. Thanks. We're such good friends that you can just call me by my first name. It's all good.
I do that with everybody. When I see, you know, Robert De Niro, I'm like, Bob, what's up, friend?
Bobby. Yeah. Hey, yeah.
The president, it's not Mr. President to me. It's, you know, it's Joe, it's Barack, it's G-Dubs. You know, that's just kind of how I roll. I think you understand that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as we kind of prepare here for this conversation about the Cleveland Browns, there's two opinions that I have heard a lot this offseason, both in Cleveland and out. And one is that the defense is likely to regress after being the number one team in football last year, number one defense in football. And two, that there's a good chance the offense might actually take a step forward. So what would you expect, a more significant change in the Browns offense getting significantly better or the defense maybe being significantly worse?
I think that I would be more likely to expect the offense to be significantly better. Now, I mean, the defense is likely to regress, but that's because all defenses are likely to regress. There's nothing about the Cleveland defense in particular that's more likely to regress than other defenses. In fact, the Cleveland defense was bad in the red zone, right? Which means their overall defense might not be as good, but if they're better in the red zone, the points allowed are going to stay the same. So we have Cleveland with our number one projection on defense, but on offense, we have them going from 28th to 19th.
So in terms of the 19th best offense in the NFL, I'm curious, like, how does that get it done? Is that the kind of championship caliber offense if you've got the number one defense in the NFL?
Here's the thing. The number one projected defense, if they actually have the rating we're projecting, will not be the number one defense, because the fact is, right, some defenses are going to be better than we expect and some defenses are going to be worse than we expect. If they have the actual number one defense in the league with an average offense, yes, they're in the mix for the Super Bowl at that point. Now, what's tough for Cleveland is what's tough for a lot of teams. First of all, they have, I think, the toughest schedule in their division. But also, the AFC is just super strong. We have eight of our top 12 projected teams are AFC teams, okay? Which means that even if we're right about all eight of those teams, one of them has to miss the playoffs.
Aaron Schatz of course, ESPN Plus is an NFL analyst, the CAO of For the Numbers on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. So I vaguely understand the idea of DVOA, and I'm not saying that in like a diminishing way. I just mean I'm not very smart, but I do understand the idea behind it. I'm just curious, though, when it comes to number one defense or number one in DVOA, what's the most amount of times a team's defense has repeated leading the league in DVOA?
Oh, that's a good question, and I do not have the answer at the tip of my tongue, but I think the answer is two or three times. We actually didn't have Cleveland number one last year. We had Baltimore number one, and Cleveland was very slightly behind them, number two. But the answer is 3 years in a row, which the Broncos did from 2014 to 2016, and the Bears from 1984 to 1986.
So while we're on the topic of value, right? That's I'm always intrigued by the true value difference between like a Mahomes and a Garrett, but even more so like a Myles Garrett and like whoever you might think is the 13th best quarterback in the NFL. So if we just kind of try on face value, what I set up there, value wise, what's the gap? What's the value gap between the most dominant pass rusher? We'll use Myles Garrett in this example, and maybe the number one quarterback in the NFL in this example, we'll use Pat Mahomes.
I mean, it's a large number, like two or three games a year. Like, the fact is that the top quarterbacks are just much more valuable than the top players at any other position. And that, you know, is not of any fault of Myles Garrett. It just has to do with the fact that the quarterback touches the ball on every offensive play, right? I mean, the thing about defense is that when there's a great defensive player, you can avoid them a little bit, right? Like, one defensive player does not make a defense. Look at the Raiders. Right. And Max Crosby, who's up there with Garrett as one of the top edge rushers in the league. And yet that defense as a whole is bad because you double team Crosby and you know he's going to get you on a few plays. But, you know, you pick on their weaknesses. So what makes the Brown defense good is they don't have the weaknesses.
So is there a magical line in the sand? Is it like quarterback 12, quarterback 15, quarterback 18? When does that disparity between elite quarterback and any starting quarterback and an elite pass rusher or elite defensive player kind of level out?
There are some other companies that do try to do numbers that are comparable across positions that would have better answers to this than I would, but I would say like the 15th or 16th best quarterback is probably equivalent to the best defensive players.
So while we're doing that, we can talk about quarterbacks because I gotta be honest with you, Aaron, we're all haggling over Deshaun Watson going into year three and can he be a top five quarterback? Can he be a top 10 quarterback or a top 15 quarterback? And you know, how does that correlate to the Browns' success this year? Is there a standard practice? Is there a way that we can gauge what level of play we're truly getting from Deshaun Watson, provided he's healthy for a full season this year?
I think after six games in 2022, we said, okay, this doesn't make sense with his past, right? He's got to be better than this. After 12 games over 2 years now, and the good season from Watson is now 4 years in the rearview mirror, I think it is unlikely that Deshaun Watson is an above-average quarterback in the NFL at this point. But he could be an average quarterback, which at least would be better than what he's done for the Browns in his first two seasons.
So not to call it all the way back, Aaron, to the very beginning of this interview, but if he's, I'll put a number on it because I'm that kind of host. If he's the 15th best quarterback in the NFL this year and the Browns have a top three defense and they are maybe even more consistent than last year because I thought that was a big thing. They had great performances and they had some caca performances. But let's say instead of being number one or even a close second in DVOA, they're top three, but they're just more consistent. Is top 15 quarterback and top three defense, is that a championship team?
Probably not. If you have an average quarterback, you really need to be the top defense.
So looking to, like, I think I really kind of love Detroit's offseason. I know not all progress is linear. As a matter of fact, it's not in really any way, unless you are consistently like San Francisco or Kansas City or something like that. But with Detroit, I actually think their defense is going to be even better. In terms of rankings, now that's not what you guys do because you actually look at the numbers and, you know, base it off that. But in terms of rankings, I've seen Jared Goff somewhere in that 13, 14, 15, 16 ranking. Is that kind of a similar case of, hey, they'll be a good team, but maybe they won't be knocking on the door of the Super Bowl for a second straight year?
No, because Goff is in a special category. Like Goff, Purdy, and Tagovailoa are in a category where their production is much higher than what we see from scouting analysts about how good they are because of the schemes that they are in, the offensive coordinators that they work with, the receivers that they work with. So Goff produces like one of the six or seven best quarterbacks in the league. Now, the fact is, if you were choosing the top five or six quarterbacks in the league, you wouldn't take Goff. You wouldn't take Tagovailoa, and you probably wouldn't take Purdy. But the production for all those guys, because of their teammates and the schemes, is in that level. So Detroit absolutely is in Super Bowl mix. I think their offense will be a little bit lower than last year. I think their defense will be a little bit better, and they are absolutely in the mix. We have them as the number two team in the entire NFC behind San Francisco.
Where do you have the Browns ranking in the AFC?
We have the Browns seventh in the AFC right now.
Does that make them? Because I think last year it felt like, well, if any one of these teams is the final seven teams, they might have a realistic chance to win a Super Bowl. Do you feel that same way about a loaded AFC this year?
Well, I mean, I feel like every team has a realistic chance to win the Super Bowl. Because I was alive in 1999 when the Rams were considered dead in the water when Trent Green got hurt, and then they went on to win the whole thing. So it's just a question of the sort of gradual drop in probabilities from your San Francisco to your, I don't know, New York Giants or whoever's at the bottom of the league. But, you know, is Cleveland in the top half of teams likely to win a Super Bowl? Yes. Are they in the top eight? No.
Aaron Schatz on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Getting you ready for the Browns. Again, he's got the FTN Football Almanac now. You can get that FTNFantasy.com. But I also know that about an hour ago, you were part of AMA. I know you tend to do Ask Me Anythings quite a bit there. What's the most common question you get in an AMA setting?
Oh, people, I mean, first of all, they want to know who's going to be a fantasy sleeper for this year. But second, you know, I get a lot of, you know, defined DVOA type questions. Because, I mean, the fact is, I named it something complicated. If I could go back in time 21 years, I would have called it something easier.
What would you call it?
I don't know, adjusted efficiency or something. Or I would have named it after myself. I don't know.
I would say... Schatz DVOA sounds even better than DVOA. I just think DVOA actually kind of rolls off the tongue there. So to bring it back to the Browns here, Aaron, David Njoku last year had by far his best season, and it felt like a payoff of a long-term hedge bet by the Cleveland Browns when they paid him a few years back. What do you think the keys are to David Njoku staying at that level of production or maybe even growing to a different level of production this year?
I mean, he's got to get out there. He's got to stay healthy. The talent has always been there for Njoku, so that's not, like, a huge surprise. Like, his catch rate wasn't as good as past years last year. He just was healthier and on the field and getting open more often. And so, like, that's the thing is he's just got to get open because if you get open, he'll make the catches and he'll get the yardage.
So that brings us to a newly minted Cleveland Brown. The Browns traded for Jerry Jeudy earlier this offseason, and kind of like the Elijah Moore trade a year before, the expectations from Browns fans seems to be all over the place. So this is more of, I think I've heard Browns fans say something similar in terms of a definitive statement, but I'll ask it as a question. If Jerry Jeudy is, production-wise, who he was in Denver, is that trade a success for the Cleveland Browns?
Kind of depends on which Jerry Jeudy you get. He's been incredibly inconsistent, okay? So let's just talk about DYAR, which is my total value stat. He was 66th in 2021. 17th in 2022, and then 57th last year. So that is a lot of bouncing around. He's been very inconsistent. If you get that guy from 2022, caught 67% of passes, had almost 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns, yeah, I mean, wow, that's really good. If you get the guy from last year, not so good.
Aaron, you're a rock star, man. Every year, I mean, not just the Football Almanac. You come here, you make me feel a little bit smarter. I appreciate that, and I appreciate all you do, buddy. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me on. FTNFantasy.com/almanac is where you find the almanac online.
That is a fantastic plug. Aaron, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks so much, man.
Aaron Schatz. On the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You know, he kind of said they have the Browns defense staying within the top kind of parameters, top two, top three, top four, but says the Browns offense he has as 19th in the NFL this year. You think that'd be a disappointment to people if it was the 19th best offense in the NFL?
I think at the end of the season, you look back and you say, what are the stats? Where does this offense lie amongst the rest of the teams in the league? I think you'd be, like, surprised. But I think it depends on what the team does, because there's a good chance you have a top five defense that keeps you in every game. And I think the offense may not be asked, certainly early in the year, to do a ton. And with that being said, that may allow this team to win a bunch of games. Maybe not the sexiest way, but your offense may not have gaudy numbers.
Daryl Ryder was filing reports from West Virginia during the latest episode of It's Always Game Day in Cleveland. He's now on his way back from the Greenbrier, but you guys can subscribe now at 923thefan.com, the free Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcast, sponsored locally by Smiley One and Bryant Northeast Ohio's premier heating and cooling solution. I don't know that I have a feel for what... Okay, so there's expectations, and then there's what you find acceptable. I don't know I have a feel for what Browns fans would feel is acceptable for the offense. I tend to think, if you ask Browns fans right now, would the 19th best offense in football be acceptable this year between the entire Deshaun saga, and I'm talking just about the on-the-field stuff the last 2 years, between how much money you're actually committing to your offense, I think between those two things, I don't think 19th would be good enough for people here.
Okay. I think that it would, actually.
So I just think people are going to compare, because to me, 19th, that's not...
Okay, 19th in what? Total yards?
I mean, I think it's in total offense. So whether that's scoring...
How do you look at it? The scoring,
let's go,
or do you
scoring.
Look at yards? Okay.
Let's go scoring. Right? Because that, in the end, that's what matters most, how many points you're putting on the board. So if you're top five in defense, or top three in defense, and top 19, you're probably somewhere in that playoff mix on the periphery. They have them as the seventh best team. Aaron Schatz is Almanac has them as the seventh best team in the AFC this year, but he doesn't put them in the top eight in terms of championship teams.
You know, I also think that Stefanski does a great job in terms of being a play caller in certain situations, mm-hmm. like situational football. I think they're really good at. So, like, I think sometimes you look at those numbers and they could be a little deceiving. Again, I'm not an analytics like guru. I do think it's good and helpful at times. And when you can look at certain things like, okay, well, how are we on third and three? Like, did we get the first down? Okay, we did, but we didn't average, you know, we only got 4 yards, but you got the first down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think those are some things that could help you be a good team, win games, have a good record, but also may not have the most, like I said, gaudy numbers in certain situations.
So...
And I'm giving credit to Stefanski. I'm saying I think he will do what he can with what he has.
I think what you just said is a very reasonable take.
Thank you.
I think we're going to be comparing this offense, especially on the days that it falls short, we're going to be comparing it to the Joe Flacco offense. And when I say we, I'm not talking about me. That's the royal we.
I think the people, if they get the exact... Yeah, you said it in your head, I know. If they get the production from Watson that they got from Flacco, I think people will be disappointed.
Wait, if they get the same production?
I think, well, the way the offense looked. I mean, oh. I know they took shots.
Shots.
Okay. Not the other thing. All right.
You think if we get the way it looked,
not necessarily the numbers, just the way that offense looks. Yeah, I think people will, because there wasn't a lot of spread. Like, it wasn't a ton. It was more.
Oh, so you're talking more scheme.
Aesthetically. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but
stylistically, as Nick Wilson would say.
But if we're talking about 30 points a game, are you going to care what it looks like?
No.
Yeah,
no,
because I think that's more what I'm saying. That's where I think you're my wires got crossed. I think, I think Browns fans are expecting to score. I don't even know what the average points per game would be offensively, but let's say it's 27. That feels somewhere in the vicinity. If you score 26 points per game with Deshaun Watson this year, even if you make the playoffs, I just think the bar is so high. Like, I don't even think a good regular season is enough to get everybody on the same page. I know that there will be some Browns fans who are like, well, hell, Deshaun stayed healthy. You had an offense that was near par. Hey, we'll take that as a positive sign of growth. I also think there's going to be a wide majority of people saying, wait, we're 3 years in. if we don't sniff a anywhere near a Super Bowl this year or AFC title game, and your offense is 19th in the NFL, 15th in the NFL, I think you're going to be seeing a lot of people who are still very down on the future direction of this team. I'm not saying they'll be right, but I think the bar, in some regards, I think the bar is almost impossibly high this year. For the offense, sorry.
Yeah. I'm just not setting it anywhere near what some people are.
So it's interesting, because I think we all have training camp colored glasses on right now. So I think there are probably some fans thinking, no, Nick's wrong about this. I'm talking about when we live it, though. Because we're all different people. Man, we have patience and we have excitement and we're like Mary Poppins or we're Julie Andrews spinning around in the mountain in a beautiful sundress. Is that a sundress? It's something like that. I don't know. The point is, you get the graphic there. That's the way we talk about this thing in August.
It was very graphic, Nick.
Thank you. I'm known for being very graphic.
What they've said about you.
They're like, is he a graphic guy? Is it a graphic thing? Is he into graphics? And Nick Wilson's your guy. But I think you saw last year. We what a fun year. Not until Joe Flacco got it going. Guys, I remember the conversations we had after the San Francisco game where that win wasn't enough for some people. And again, I'm not actually trying to divide. I'm just trying to point out we're all super divided. This is as divided about a good Browns team. They're in a good spot. They are. They've been to the playoffs 2 of 4 years. Their low water mark was 15 wins in 2 years, which was a high water mark pretty much any other time with the Cleveland Browns. And usually it was like a 9-win season and then like a 6-win season. So like, if you had told me 4 years into Stefanski, here are the accomplishments, and then the fan base is going to be fractured, I don't know, as it is. I don't know.
The fan base
believe
is fractured because of the player they decided to get. I mean, they made that call. They could have kept Baker. They could have done something else. Listen, they made the bet.
I think it's fractured because of who they moved on from. But dude, it was fractured when Baker was here. Think about 2021. We had a year after Baker Mayfield led Cleveland to their first playoff win in forever, and the first road playoff win since, what, 1994? A year later, like 8 regular season games later, we were talking about trading Baker Mayfield, or you can't pay Baker Mayfield. I'm not saying we, by the way, because I was anti any of that. So I'm not trying to be revisionist history, because I totally have said, I understood the point at the time, and I said this. Every team in the NFL would make this trade with all the different strings attached and everything. Every team would go from Baker Mayfield to Deshaun Watson if they could. But at the same point, I wasn't one of the people trying to run him out of town. There was a fair amount of, and it started on this station, a lot of stations, a lot of fan, more fan sites, podcasts. It was a real talk 10 games into that season.
Yeah, I mean, I look back at Baker's last year, and we were so critical on the guy. I feel bad because I was critical too. Had he not, I mean, that shoulder was killing him. And yeah, he gets healthy, what's he do? It's back to Baker.
But I think that's the point.
My point is, I'm giving Baker credit for being a tough dude.
Yeah,
And he took a lot, I mean, from all of us.
Yeah. And, well, but I think, like, so it's not just the Deshaun thing. It was this fracture has been around, and I don't know if it's because of the environment. We all remember the sports talk radio we had to do during that summer of COVID. We remember what that was like. It was
I want to forget it.
It was a fractured time, even within sports talk. There was just landmines everywhere. So I don't know if we just have never recovered from that, but like I never would have dreamed this is where we are 4 years into a pretty successful regime. And listen, some of this is, guys, some of this is, like, guys, there are people who want to fire Bill Belichick. There are people who wanted to trade Tom Brady and move on for Jimmy Garoppolo. So it's not as if this is all toxic or dysfunctional or anything like that. But, like, I heard the conversations out there. Don't know where I heard it. Don't know where I might have seen it. for like 5 minutes on like a Twitter poll. I didn't even really see a Twitter poll. But like, there's a conversation in the ether somewhere out there, something on the wing about Mike Vrabel's popularity. And you start comparing. We talked about Mike Vrabel versus Jerry Jeudy. What's the better offseason acquisition? About 43% thought Mike Vrabel, a guy who's not going to have a game day role.
He's like a quality control coach.
Yes.
And that,
and by the way, the most valuable quality control coach you can ever find.
And dude, there are quality control coaches around the league. And again, he's going to have more of a role than a normal QC. And no shots at QCs out there because they turn out to be head coaches one day. But I don't think that Vrabel's going to be having a huge impact on a day-to-day basis. I think it's his expertise will be helpful for Stefanski.
But I think that's illustrative. Illustrative? Yeah, illustrative.
Boy, I wouldn't try that on the radio. I would screw that up and you'd give me like the salt and vinegar eyes and I would just feel embarrassed.
I just always give you those eyes. You earn them. But I think it's illustrative.
But
very much of the love.
I was doing walking. You did boar hat.
I know. They're very close. Of the love that Vrabel has in this town.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is if you try and compare that to the love that Deshaun has in town, because this is not actually a sign of like, it's not meant as a negative conversation or to put more, what's the right word, more shade in Deshaun's direction. But I think Mike Vrabel is probably more popular right now with Browns fans in general than all but three or four players. Like, I think Chubb is clearly the most popular player in town. I think Myles Garrett's right there. I think David Njoku's right there. I think Joe Batonio's right there. I can find you several guys, five, six guys. But I don't know, because again, we're talking about popularity. We're talking about Q rating. In Q rating, it's about how known are you. Popularity, we're talking about how much people like you. There's no downside with Mike Vrabel. He's from here. He played at Ohio State. He's a very successful former Ohio State coach, assistant coach. He might be the Buckeyes' next head coach in some people's desires. He's was wildly successful in Tennessee, and he's a person that people have coveted for the Cleveland Browns. There's no negative vibe for Mike Vrabel. You can't say that with Deshaun Watson. At the risk of doing hack radio, we do have dueling polls out there for you to take. And the initial one, I think I saw something similar on the 92.3 The Fan Twitter account earlier today, but I can't recall. I don't see it anywhere here. So I think Keith just posted this. Who is more popular with Browns fans right now, Mike Vrabel or Deshaun Watson? So that is a... That is one Twitter poll at 923 The Fan. If you want to vote there, 43 votes in, and 72% are saying Mike Vrabel.
Oh, it's way, way up now.
It's
close to getting close to 150. 75-25.
Okay. So I've also tweeted from my personal account at Nick Wilson says, when you hear the question, is Mike Vrabel more popular in Cleveland than Deshaun Watson? What comes to mind? Negativity about Deshaun or positivity about Vrabel, 30 votes in, not necessarily as many as Keith's poll just yet, but 70% of votes saying negativity about Deshaun. Actually, we've updated 38 votes now, 63% saying negativity about Deshaun and positivity about Mike Vrabel. I think Deshaun is just... I think that when it comes to Twitter, I think the worst thing you can do imaginable if you're trying to have an authentic conversation is worry too much about what Twitter thinks. Because you are giving a lot of voice to a potentially a smaller percentage of your audience, a minority of your audience. So I do think, like when I heard the question, I actually did hear a negative question when I first heard the question. And Keith, you're kind of the, you know, this is kind of an extension of our Mike Vrabel, Jerry Jeudy conversation. That's not the way you intended it, yes?
Yeah, no, I just think that Mike Vrabel is a, it's intriguing because he's from here. He's a Buckeye. People loved when he came back from the Browns because he's from here and he was a Buckeye. So there's like, there's three levels of it. And had you not had Stefanski, people would be like all over him as a head coach. Like, and they want him as Ohio State head coach. So there's a lot of things mixed into here. It's like he's a beloved figure in the area. I don't think this is so much about Deshaun as it is just people love Mike Vrabel. Like, they love everything that he is. You guys, we talked before the show. He fits the identity of what this city really is. Like, hard nose, like, he's a physical head coach. Like, that's how he was as a player.
So I think
Keith is pushing the narrative, baby.
Well, I just, I think
I love it.
I would bet that there would be and I don't know how many of the votes that we already have. I would imagine that it's not as simple as pro Vrabel, anti Deshaun. I think there might be people voting for, or rather pro Deshaun, pro Vrabel. I think there might just be people rooting for Vrabel because of the anything but Deshaun. And that can be anything from everything before the trade, or the last 2 years.
Yeah, but think about this. Like, this is what comes up in conversation. They came up with Donovan Mitchell all the time. It's like he's not homegrown talent. So it took more for you to embrace a guy. Now, he didn't have the off-the-field stuff that Deshaun did, so that is understandable. But when you're a homegrown guy like Mike Vrabel is, it doesn't take that extra step to, like, embrace the guy. He's already been embraced.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think I'll be honest with you, dude. We've had completely innocuous questions out there about Deshaun that are taken negatively.
Like Mike Vrabel earlier, I think it was Wednesday when he spoke, he was talking about how he ate dog biscuits as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not hearing that out of, and you shouldn't hear that on Deshaun. He didn't grow up a Browns fan. But that's just the added advantage in this kind of instance that Mike Vrabel has on any player, really. I think he would have that advantage maybe on any player outside of maybe Nick Chubb and Myles Garrett.
No, but if Deshaun had played well the last 2 years, it would be a landslide the other way.
That is definitely true.
So I think that's why people hear a negative. It's almost like you assume a negative question, which I didn't know questions could be negative. But now that I've worked in sports talk for a majority of my adult life, I certainly found out they can be. That is,
well, I mean, you're allowed to talk through these things.
No, I agree with you, by the way. I don't necessarily look at anybody else on the show as pro Deshaun. I feel like I have been of, I don't have a Deshaun agenda. And I'm not saying anybody in here does, so I don't want to paint it like that. I feel like a lot of voices in this town do have a Deshaun agenda, though. And it's been tough to not, because you can read through court documents and it can impact your thoughts on that. You can have seen, you know, you can have looked at how Deshaun has talked the last couple of years and have definitive thoughts on how Deshaun has handled things. And I don't think Deshaun has handled it nearly well enough. I think he has insulated himself. I think he has missed a lot of opportunities to make. Listen, in the end, football goes a long way. It doesn't go the entire way. And 2 years in, I think it has hindered him here that people have. When I say people, I'm talking about
people,
general fans. Mm-hmm. I don't think they know who Deshaun is. I think that's a missed opportunity for Deshaun, specifically coming out of the situation he came in. At the same point, I understand it, and I empathize to a big degree. If Browns fans who support Deshaun Watson feel under attack, and maybe this means that Deshaun is right to feel that as well, that Deshaun is under attack from every which way because of the way the last 2 years have gone. And honestly, I don't even think it's mostly us. I do think there are a lot of people who move past their bias to give fair takes on Deshaun Watson, who might have real objections to the trade or the accusations and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not trying to open up Pandora's box here. But I get it that, like, It's a little easier to say we should all forget that Sarah Spain called all Browns fans trash 2 years ago because three kids wanted their autographs from Deshaun in his first training. There were literally, even as soon as last year, or as recent as last year, we had people coming on the station saying, I don't want the Browns to win because of Deshaun.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I didn't perceive the question as negative, I think I'm to the point where I totally get it, because it's not just you might be pro Deshaun. You're also sick of the fact that this thing hasn't worked out. So it's like any question you ask about Deshaun, there's no purity. There's nothing that you can get to where you feel just positive about it. And I think that, so even if you don't take it negatively, it's a question about Deshaun, there's going to be a negative connotation.
Every time. And I don't know where that goes, how it goes, Nick, at this point. I just want to watch the dude play football and hope he plays well.
Yeah.
I don't have to like the guy.
Yeah, well, and
I don't know that I like any play. I mean, in terms of like off the field stuff, like it's not great.
I just think Baker's the perfect litmus test for this. When Baker was doing all the crap in 2020 and making us laugh, we were laughing because they were winning. And when Baker did the, I'm going to have three different facial hair looks within the same game day, it was annoying. And I know that we're dealing with a lot higher level stuff here, and there's things that go from what Deshaun was accused of and all this, but like, I think it's easier for people in the media who we talk about this every day, we see a lot more. I think it's easier for us to say, well, I don't know, I need to like Deshaun. I think that's a lot tougher when it's not your job and you don't spend 5 hours a day talking about it or thinking about it. Because I think the situation, it's a situation the Browns put themselves in. It's a situation Deshaun is certainly, responsible for his part of this. The NFL probably deserves some blame, but like, Browns fans didn't choose this, even if they saw the logic in the trade. And so I can understand wanting to have the conversation, but like, if you say, is Mike Vrabel one of the five most popular Browns, people are still going to relate that to Deshaun Watson. So whether it's the intent, I think, doesn't matter anymore. By the way, about 59% of votes saying when they hear is Mike Vrabel more popular in Cleveland than Deshaun, 59% saying that they feel negativity about Deshaun. That's what comes to mind, not positivity about Mike Vrabel. Then we flip over to the other of the dueling polls. Who is more popular with the Browns fans right now? Deshaun Watson and Mike Vrabel. 230 votes in, 74% saying Mike Vrabel.
It's pretty surprising, is it not?
No.
Okay.
No, I think that I would expect this. Because a lot of it is because of what Keith is saying. We love our own here. And I mentioned, listen, if Deshaun had played well the last 2 years, that's because Deshaun would be our own. If Deshaun plays well the last 2 years, he would be accepted. It's that simple.
Okay, and what do you think it would be, let's say Baker going into that last year, not after the last year because there are a lot of things that happened that people didn't like, maybe him not agree with the organization. Going into the last year of Baker, what do you think the percentage would be if Mike Vrabel was here then?
I think it would be much more 50-50.
That's what I think, too. I think it would be split. But I think that speaks to people loved Baker, but they just love Mike Vrabel that much that he could equal that.
Can I tell you what it also really speaks to? And this is, again, the flawed premise of every Deshaun conversation. We have no before with Deshaun. There's no 2020 in here with Deshaun. There's no 2019. There's no that ridiculous stretch of football he put up in 2017 as a rookie before the injury. There's none of that. So with Baker, if we're having the same conversation in 2020, in the midst of the Baker Wars, if we're having that same conversation, honestly, we're looking back and going, well, listen, Mike Vrabel's from here. We love him. But, like, Baker is Cleveland because he just beat Pittsburgh. So there might be more people willing to slag Baker at that time. There's still so many more people that are like, Screw Mike Vrabel. He didn't win in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
He's not. I mean, yeah, he's from here. We love him. He's a Buckeye. But those Patriots titles don't mean a damn thing to me. 216-474-0092. We're doubling up on polls here, guys. You can take either one here. At 923 The Fan, who is more popular with Browns fans right now, Deshaun Watson or Mike Vrabel? And at Nick Wilson says, when you hear the question, is Mike Vrabel more popular in Cleveland than Deshaun Watson? What comes to mind? Negativity about Deshaun, positivity about Vrabel.